scared me. She's not used to being on this side. I'm going to call to order the March 23rd, 2023 City of Ventnor Commission meeting to order. Flag salute, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic of which one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Lisa, roll call.
Commissioner Kriebel?
Here.
Commissioner Mento?
Here.
Mayor Landgraf?
Here. Pursuant to the Open Public Meetings Act, adequate notice of this meeting has been provided in accordance with the law. We have a couple of presentations tonight. We're going to start out with some new Ventnor City police officers. Chief?
So I just thought it'd be a good opportunity. You see the three new faces we have in the department. They both are, all three of them are recent graduates of the Police Academy, where they did exceptionally well. Officer Gaffney received the most improved award from basically from day one to the last day. He showed the most improvement in all aspects of the training. Officer Conan shot nearly a perfect score on the firearms.
Nice.
And they all academically were in the top five. Nice. And Officer Gaffney was like 2 points away from being the top academic candidate.
Well done.
That's Officer Morgan Conan, Officer Michael Whalen, Officer Stephen Gaffney. Officer Conan and Officer Gaffney reside in Brigantine. They started out in the police academy as alternate route candidates. They were born and raised up in the northern part of New Jersey. So the South is completely new to them. So learning our streets and the way we do things down here is an adjustment for them. But they're in the field training program as we speak. About three weeks in, doing very well. Matter of fact, I just got a briefing today from the field training officers and so forth. They're ahead of the game. So
great.
We expect big things from them and just be seeing awesome. Their faces around. So I just want to introduce them.
Welcome south of the Mason-Dixon line. Welcome, guys. And ladies. All right. Next on our presentation list, we have our lower Ventnor resiliency presentation. We have one of our consultant engineers, Mark de Blasio, here and his team, along with Ed Stinson, our city engineer. This is an area of Ventnor Heights right in and around the Dorset Avenue Bridge. It is an area that we all know floods quite often. This was a study to look at how we can, at options to make that better. This does not force us to do anything at this point. This was really a study to show us where we are, what happens with certain elevations of tides and floods and rain events. So, Mark, I'll turn it over to you. And we got a presentation. Mark and Matt, come on up and go through what you did and your report. And this will be, once we're finished tonight, this report we will put on our website. We'll be able to do that. It's got a lot of maps, a lot of text, a lot of charts, good information, really good information. Been working on this for probably the last year, close to a year, 12 months or so. We have two maps on either end that kind of show inundation areas at different tide levels, flood elevation levels, and then we'll go through the report. And the floor is yours, Mark.
So we have to share a screen here, right?
You might have to mute yours.
Yeah, he is showing muted, so it should be okay.
Okay.
It's a good reason to have it up to answer.
Yeah.
First of all, we'd like to thank the city for the opportunity to work on this very important project.
Jim, we got a real bad echo in here.
One of the whoever signed on as commish, their audio is on and I can't mute it.
Oh, okay.
That's the one that looks like it's causing it.
All right, try it now, Mark.
Okay. It's not yours, Lance. It's the other one.
No, check. Tim's the only other one that's on.
Yeah, the audio's got to be on because it's not showing muted.
Is it this one?
You got it on.
No, you got to mute it. You got your headset. See that thing over there on the left?
There's no headset. I'll just leave. Okay. Try it out.
Still echoing.
It's still not showing muted on my end.
I don't want to hold you up. I'll leave. I'll get back in. All right.
Did that fix it? Still echoing, Jim.
Well, I'm still getting echo. I mean, it's got to be Mark's PC then. Even though it's muted, it's got to be his PC because that's the only thing that's different.
Mark's PC?
Something on yours is not muted. Can you mute yours?
We're muted.
Yeah, it's showing muted, but that's got to be what's doing it. That's the only thing. The only other thing I can do is I can knock you off, Lance. Let me try see if that does anything, but I doubt it.
I'll leave as well. How's that?
I'm still getting an echo, so it's got to be his computer. That's the only thing.
Only other microphone.
Your mic's on?
Yeah, these have to be on.
They have to be on?
Yeah. For us to be recorded so the audience can hear us.
Maybe move his mic, the microphone he was using, away from the computer. That could be doing it as well.
Move that all the way over to you,
Mark. How's that?
Well, why is it picking up me if I'm 10 feet away from you?
There's nothing else that I see on this end or on your end that could be doing it. I mean, I'm sorry to say that, but that's the only thing I'm seeing. We were fine up until he logged on, until he shut out his screen. There's no echo up until that point. So that's where the problem is.
And your machine's muted, right, Mark?
Yeah.
It can't. Something's got to be picking that up.
Is your speaker all the way down as well?
Yeah.
Mark.
That's better.
How's that? There
that's
we go.
That's a lot better. Yep. Yeah.
All right.
All right.
How's that? Yep. Better.
We're good. Okay. All right. Let's move forward. I'm going to start line back in.
Okay. Let's do a do-over here.
There we go.
All right. So first of all, we'd like to thank the city for the opportunity to work on this very important project, and we're excited to present our findings and recommendations to you tonight. By way of introduction, this report was fully funded by a FEMA grant, and we hope this effort allows the city to receive additional FEMA funds to construct the improvements. This report focuses on the Ventnor Heights section of the city, the study area, which is defined roughly south of Calvert Avenue, north and east of Inside Thoroughfare, and west of East Canal Waterways, comprises approximately 400 housing units and 736 people as of the 2010 census. Elevations in this area range from approximately 2 feet on streets near the bay to approximately 6 feet in the 88 datum, try not to confuse everybody with that, on some blocks. Most homes are built where the grade of the surrounding land is approximately 4 to 5 feet in the 88 datum. By comparison, homes in a newer section of the Heights are built where the grade is closer to 7 feet in the 88 datum. The neighborhood is protected by a system of bulkheads owned by private property owners, which are at varied heights and materials. This report was developed for the purpose of educating the city, public, and private property owners of the existing flooding challenges facing the city, establishing recommendations to mitigate the adverse impacts of flooding that do not adversely affect natural resources and conforms to local, state, and federal regulations, providing flood mitigation infrastructure options to guide the city, including construction cost estimates and permitting requirements, prioritizing flood mitigation capital improvement projects based upon certainty of success, cost restrictions, and need for further analysis, determine crucial flooding vulnerabilities, such as holes and walls in low-lying areas. I'm going to jump to the executive summary here. Our recommendations are categorized in the following manner. There's three categories. Category A, capital infrastructure projects. Category B, preventative actions. Category C, natural resources and regulatory agencies. Under section A, which is physical improvements, capital infrastructure, number one, we're recommending to construct bayside control improvements to reduce tidal nuisance flooding, preventing entering the city streets through the existing storm sewer system. Two, elevate roadways in cooperation with private property owners to reduce flooding with particular emphasis on tidal nuisance flooding events. Three, replace or retrofit city bulkheads to increase heights to elevation 8 in the 88 datum. All components of the bulkhead system should be constructed to be watertight by backfilling up against the landward side of the bulkhead or any other method approved by the city engineer. Four, construct storm sewer pump stations along the bayside at strategic locations to increase the hydraulic capacity of the storm sewer system and to control tidal flooding. Those locations have been determined to be at Derby Avenue and Surrey Avenue. Five, increase the hydraulic capacity of the existing storm sewer system when completing capital infrastructure projects through retrofitting, replacement, and supplementation of the storm sewer inlets and piping. Category B, preventative actions, mitigates the susceptibility to flooding. Number one, this is one that you're probably going to have to look at pretty hard. Enact a bulkhead ordinance that requires new bulkheads to be constructed at a minimum elevation of 8, including waterproofing that's connected to a time compliance, a substantial improvement requirement, and continued monitoring of sea level rise. Utilize updated sea level rise data to evaluate increasing bulkhead heights elevation. So as time goes on, you get more sea level rise, you may want to consider raising that minimum 8 to 9 or 10 or 8. Two, consider the lock rating ordinance and drainage ordinance that requires private property owners to raise their lock frontage to a minimum elevation, construct garages and floor vents at a minimum elevation, and install underground stormwater recharge. That would put the city in position to potentially raise roads in the future. If your private properties are up, it'll be easier for you to raise your roads. Three, educate and improve communication to property owners of flooding events through advanced storm warning systems, forecasting, and emergency planning. Four, encourage elevating or floodproofing new and existing bulk buildings through local zoning codes, building requirements, and development policies. Five, and this is highlighted, adopt a policy on current sea level rise based on data collected by Rutgers University and recommendations from the DEP. Category C, this is preservation and restoration of natural resources and regulatory agencies. This is a category where you're basically just bird dogging regulations, staying involved with the New Jersey Coastal Coalition, and just kind of staying up with the times with what everybody else is doing. One, evaluate and enact local zoning ordinances, policies, and design requirements that are consistent with the NJDEP and U.S. Army Corps regulations. Two, consider land acquisition, purchase repetitive lost properties in open space and flood-prone areas. Three, continue to participate in the New Jersey Coastal Coalition. And four, continue to participate and collaborate in Atlanta County HMP initiatives. In order to develop our recommendations, we reviewed the following existing conditions. There's four of them. First one is topography. Second one is the existing storm sewer infrastructure in the drainage areas, actually sub-drainage areas. Three, coastal tidal data and sea level rise. And four, bulkhead elevations. So topography. So your existing topography, that information was obtained by our New Jersey licensed professional land surveyor, completed between June 10th and August 26th of last year. Essentially, as seen on the existing condition plan, areas along the bayfront are lower than the properties located in the interior of the study area. Along the bayside, roadway elevations generally range from 2 to 5 feet, and the interior roadways elevations generally range from 3 to 6 feet in the 88 data. The highest area of the study area is the Dorset Avenue Bridge, and the lowest area of the study area is the intersection of Harvard and Calvert Avenue. Existing storm sewer infrastructure and drainage area. Essentially, we surveyed the entire area to pick up your existing infrastructure. The city's storm sewer infrastructure is designed to remove excess rainwater from impervious surfaces such as paved streets, parking lots, sidewalks, and roofs. The city's storm sewer infrastructure in this area includes locations of storm sewer inlets, manholes, and outfalls. The outfalls include 9 Bayside gravity outfalls and 2 Bayside force mains located at the existing Calvert Avenue storm sewer pump station. This slide is our existing condition survey of the area. Shows the 11 existing outfalls. Shows the existing pump station. And then this area shows the 5 existing drainage boundaries. Each drainage boundary collects rainwater that falls from the sky, runs down the street into an inlet and out into an outfall. So the third thing we looked at was the coastal tidal data and sea level rise. We have the closest tide gauge that we used our analysis was located on the US Route 40 and Albany Street in Chelsea Heights section of Atlantic City. The data that we looked at is based in the 1988 datum, and that data was collected and reviewed from 2012 to 2022 for a total of 3,777 observations. If you look at the table on the far left-hand side, that correlates to a tidal elevation that the gauge read. If you go all the way to the right-hand side where it says average number, that tells you how many times average per year that that tide saw water at higher than that elevation. So for example, it says above 2 feet, the tide gauge saw that 263 times. Above 2.5 feet, it was 160 times. Above 3, it was 62. And above 3.5 feet is 19. That data is really important because you can see there's a sweet spot there that when you get to anything above 3 feet, you have a dramatic drop off of observations. So that will tie into a discussion we're going to have about roadway elevation. So if your streets were, again, wishful thinking, if your streets could all get up to elevation 4, you're going to see flooding in those streets about 6 times a year. So that's the importance of analyzing that data. Couple notable, 3 notable storm events that were observed. You had Superstorm Sandy at 5.62. You had the nor'easter of October 27th, 18 at 5.40. And Winter Storm Jonas at 5.28. So sea level rise. The DEP has actually placed a report out there and they've made recommendations on that. The report identified and evaluated the most current science on sea level rise to project the rise by using year 2000 as a baseline. The results are summarized into low end and high end sea level rise chance occurrences. Essentially, that report, the DEP recommends that you select an upper range that reflects a 17% chance of being met in that analysis. So it shows you by year, if you're using that to design or plan or enact ordinances, that's their recommendation. Another tool that we use to look at sea level rise is the NOAA chart. That NOAA chart stands for National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That data and that chart goes from 1911 to 2021. Let's see, there. And essentially what they have indicated based on that trend is we're seeing 0.16 inches per year of sea level rise. The next series of slides, we're going to show you our survey elevation and how that relates to flooding. That kind of goes back to the tide gauge data. So the first map shows areas that flow at elevation 2.5 and below. The next map shows areas that flood between elevation 3 and below. Next slide shows flooding at elevation 3.5 and below. Next slide shows elevation flooding below elevation 4 and below. So as you can see, we're starting to hit that sweet spot of where that elevation really starts to impact your roadways, because you have the tide coming back up through your streets and the storm pipes, and we'll get into that a little bit later. This is elevation 4.5 and below. Elevation 5 and below. Now we're starting to get into like Superstorm Sandy type stuff. 5.5 and below. The last item that we looked at was evaluating your bulkhead elevations along the perimeter of the study area. A survey of the bayfront was started on June 9th and completed on June 10th. We were very fortunate that we didn't have any dogs bite our surveyors or upset residents during that process. The data was collected to assess the bulkhead elevations to help determine crucial flooding vulnerabilities and low-lying bayside protection. The city's ordinance, specifically Chapter 92-8 bulkheads and seawalls, requires that the top elevation of constructed bulkheads be set to a minimum elevation of 8 in the 88 datum and a maximum elevation of 9 unless the adjacent grade is higher. The lowest elevation that was recorded was 2.59. The highest was 8.49, and the mean elevation was 5.2. So there was a total of 106 data points collected, and out of those 106, 18 actually complied, which is 16%. So 16% of your bulkheads comply. Moving along now, we had, this is where we kind of get into the physical improvements, proposed improvements and recommendations. Elevate bulkheads on the city side and the private side as well. Elevate roadways where you can. Installing proper bayside tide control. We feel that this is the most effective technique or improvement that you could make. It's like building a house. This is the foundation by which the walls would be erected, and you wouldn't want to erect a wall without a proper foundation. We believe this is your best bang for your buck here dealing with this. And number 4, storm sewer pump stations. So elevating bulkheads. City's actually fortunate in this area. You only have one bulkhead that you own, and that's located at the Calvert Avenue and Harvard Avenue intersection. As you can see, we have a shot on that bulkhead of 6.8, and then the adjacent private property owner is at elevation 3.7, which is a berm. So we would recommend that you evaluate raising your bulkhead another 1.2 feet. But as you can see, that would be inconsequential if the private property owners don't get up as well. Elevate roadways. It's my favorite topic here. Gets me in trouble. So roadways along the bay are the lowest in elevation, with the lowest areas being bounded by Calvert Avenue, Derby Avenue, Edgewater Avenue, and Surrey Avenue. The roadways in this area range from 3 to 6 feet. As discussed before, the roadways are at elevation 3 feet, will flood 62 days a year. If the roadways are raised to elevation 4, the flooding decreases to only 6 times per year. If the roadways are raised to 5 feet in elevation, the flooding decreases to 0 days per year. So that's always easier said than done. When you have water in the roadway, you can see you have water on top of the red line there. So your roadway is flooded. So if you could pick it up, you could actually get out of the water. The only challenge to that is it requires private property owners to cooperate to meet raised elevation. So you have to have buy-in on them because there's an impact to them. Bayside tide control. I'd mentioned this, we have broken this down into 3 options. In this case here, option A is an inline check valve, which we do not recommend, but we had to evaluate it for you. Option B, manually operated tide control valve. We believe that that's a valid option for you. Option C, same type of valve with electronic control on it. The fourth item storm sewer pump station. Essentially, the storm sewer pump station was identified to be at Derby Avenue in Surrey. And the storm sewer pump station essentially functions like a reliable tide control valve, but it has the added benefit of being able to evacuate water behind it when you have rain. So it's the superior solution. It's the most costly solution, but it checks all the boxes. During our conceptual design, when we were working on this with Ed, we had identified two pump stations in strategic location and how we could route and reroute some piping to deal with that. We were looking at opportunities to eliminate some outfalls, because at that point your outfalls are a liability to you. So if you can get it in through the pump station, that would work. The design conceptually right now is to have pump stations with the ability to have stormwater bypass it through gravity with a tide sensor valve. And I had mentioned this to Ed, as if we get into design, this may change a little bit as to which outfalls are eliminated or kept. That would flush itself out. So these slides here illustrate trying to make this explanation so everybody could really understand it. And this is called the hydrostatic paradox, which is water seeks its own level. So here is an example, I think a real life example of your situation. Where you have a sunny day, everybody's happy, the tide is down, you have a street elevation of 3, you have a bulkhead elevation of 6, which is pretty good, and you have a tide elevation of 1.57, all is good in life. Now you get a high tide. Your tide gets up to elevation 5.5. So through the hydrostatic paradox, water is going to seek its own level. That outfall pipe now becomes a conduit to flood your roadway. So the roadway is at elevation 3, but the water there is now at 5.5 because water has sought its own level. So as you can see, without proper tide control, you could raise the bulkhead to 7, you could raise the bulkhead to 8, but your water is in the street is still going to be at 5.5. Further exacerbated with rain and wind waves coming in, you kind of have a bad scenario. Now, with a proper tidal control valve, in that same scenario, you have a tide at 5.50, your street is dry at elevation 3. It now has to fight to get over that bulkhead. And that's where the bulkhead becomes important. The tide control valve becomes a force multiplier on your bulkhead. So now Mother Nature has to work harder, it has to get up over 6 to get into your roadways. So when you look at that scenario, you compare with a tide control valve and without a tide control valve, you can see the importance of the valve. As I had mentioned earlier, if you have a valve in place and you've now stopped the tide from coming in, which is great, now you have a heavy rain. Rain falls on the landward side of your bulkhead. It starts to fill your pipes up. Once your pipes get full and they can no longer hold the rainwater, that water now bubbles out into your street. So now you have surface flooding in your study area. In order to deal with that, a pump station would take that water and force it out into the bay. This slide shows the advantages and disadvantages of those four scenarios. Cost consideration, regulatory permitting, advantages and disadvantages. As I had mentioned before, I would not recommend option A. In my experience over the last 20 years or so, I believe that option has proven to not be reliable. So we're going to steer you away from that in terms of our recommendation. And that is our presentation.
All right. Thanks, Mark. A lot of information. I know we've met a couple times getting ready for this presentation, and you know there's a lot of options that we look at. We'll have to look at. Certainly, the first one is the tide control valves, and looking at something in that regard. And we do have what I'll call flapper valves or duck bill valves, but they get clogged. That's our problem with them now. They get if they're in line, they get full of debris that comes through that system and then they get stuck open. And that's how we get tide water back into the our streets.
If they're on the end of a pipe, they're out of sight, out of mind, and nobody really wants to deal with them or can. So
right. Yeah. So the best option, the first option I looked at is the first one he's recommending is getting a control valve. You can actually either through a SCADA system, electronic, or hand, you know, manual valve. So that's certainly something on a first step. You know, the road elevation, that's problematic. That's just hard to do, especially in the locations where it's at, because all those homes are right down, their yards are right down at that same, you know, at curb level. So there's going to be some options that we'll have to look at through Ed's office and yours as well. One of the questions, I know we talked about this being the hardest thing to do probably, is this bulkhead ordinance that has a time compliance in it. Did the borough of West Wildwood implement that?
The borough of Stone Harbor enacted that several years ago.
Okay.
Has some challenges with it for you as elected officials because you're
right.
Forcing somebody on a time frame to do something to spend money.
Right. But we have a lot of vulnerable bulkheads in that area that we've tried to work with residents there. There were some new homes significantly renovated. A few were able to skirt our rules that we put in place that require you to become FEMA compliant and build that bulkhead the way it's supposed to be done. That ordinance would force that issue. The problem is a lot of these bulkheads are under people's homes, and that's an issue. Whether they have to elevate or do something to comply with that. And you're right, that's a hard thing to ask and for a governing body to do. But that's the ultimate answer is to get the bulkheads up. I mean, you have ones that are under 3 feet. That's why the streets flood at tide level 3. And water comes right in where these bulkheads are non-existent. Ed, go ahead. I thought you wanted to say something.
You know what? I did want to thank Mark and Matt. The report's extremely comprehensive. The topo of that entire area, large area, the analysis on the bulkheads is going to be very helpful for us in planning for the future, right? We now know elevations of every bulkhead within that study area. And it really gives us now the tools to make a plan and comes up with the recommendations. So I wanted to thank Mark and Matt for that work. And the reason I came up was the issue with the bulkheads, right? Even if we can get the bulkheads elevated, we still have the issue of the low ground.
Sure.
And you're going to hold water as the tide comes up above that elevation, right? So our thought is, and the recommendations in the report is, we start with the foundation being the pump stations, the storm sewer improvements. So eliminating the outfalls that we can, because they do become a liability. Improving our check valve system on those outfalls that we keep so that we can prevent the tide from coming back in. But when we do that, then we got to recognize tide or rainwater won't go out
right.
Unless we have some mechanical means to do that, because we can't make water go uphill is the issue. And then that's the starting point, the way I see it and the way the report makes a recommendation. That's where we have to start. If we want to consider doing something in that area, it is going to be building that infrastructure and improving that infrastructure so that we can get water out of that area as tide permits with the existing bulkhead conditions. That's going to be our limiting factor. We can build the infrastructure. We can build the pump stations. It's going to be costly. Our goal is to hopefully get this to a design that puts us in a place where we can be eligible for funding. There's a lot of funding that we're told is coming down the pipeline, that BRIC program for example. So we want to be in a spot to be first in line or close to first in line for any funding that comes down. The fact that FEMA funded this report helps us in that effort. And building that infrastructure, hopefully when we get grants, gives us a good starting point. the next big hurdle. That's a huge hurdle, but it's very doable because we have the means to do that once we get the funding. The big hurdle is going to be, as you said, the homes, the private bulkheads, and increasing the height of the bulkheads. And that's a significant problem with not a really easy answer. Mark said, I think the lowest bulkhead in that area is 2.3 or 2.4, which is very close to high tide. That's a problem, and it's a problem that impacts that entire area. The other thing, the homes that are over the bulkhead, right? If that bulkhead is low, so that bulkhead is lower than 8, right? Because it's a vulnerability. That means that home, that floor is lower than 8, right? And FEMA, the base flood elevation in that area is at least 9. So the thought is, as homes reconstruct and trigger that substantial improvement, they're going to have to elevate. And then there's going to have to be, you know, a engineering way to construct the bulkhead underneath a raised home that gives us compliance, right? But to circle back, it has to start somewhere. And our feeling is that the best way to start is that infrastructure. And once we build, so that's storm sewer work, that's reducing the outfalls, putting the check valve system in on those outfalls, building a pump station so that we can, you know, deal with the flooding that we get now, and then work towards these bulkheads. Raising the roads will be difficult. There are some locations, believe it or not, where we probably can get 6 inches, 8 inches, 10 inches, something like that with the existing the properties in that area. So we may be able to do some pieces, and we'll try to kind of roll that into the lead service line replacement. And when we do that and reconstruct those streets, but I go back to it has to start somewhere. If we want to address it, you know, the best way to start is that infrastructure.
I think that's the way to go. I mean, that we've had that discussion, and you're right. Start with what we can control.
Right.
With money.
Yeah.
So just to add to what Ed said, we feel really confident that in this area, you can raise your roads 6 to 12 inches in the area. So as you do your roadways, I would challenge your consultants to do that for you. But I guess the bad news is the road is low. The good news is it's low enough that it can be raised relative to the properties. Okay. So I do think, as you saw the tide data, every half a foot you can get up, gets it into another.
Yeah,
it helps.
Incrementally, it helps. Yeah. That's how I read that chart. It's like, look, we can get to here. We can get to, you know, 6 to 10 events a year. It's better than the 100 and some that we have now. So
I have a question about the pump stations, more for my education and the public's maybe, is that when do those pumps not get triggered until high tide begins to drop, until after high tide? Because they're really just to expel water. They're not that is already in place. It's not like it's not like you turn them on when the event's going on.
So you would program the pump station with telemetry that once the tide got to a certain elevation, it would sense that with a sensor, and it would shut off the valve, and then the pump station would come on. And when the tide goes down, there's no sense of you burning your pumps and spending money on electricity. Valve opens up and it would bypass through a gravity line out.
Right.
And then for a rain event, they're set with the levels of your wet well. So as the rain event happens, it's going to go gravity, as Mark said, except when that tide raises to a point that triggers closing the valve.
Right.
Then the pump stations then become operable, and they'll turn on and off with the level of the rain.
Yeah, I guess my point is that they're not going to stop flooding. Those pumps are not going to stop flooding.
No. Yeah.
And I think that's the misconception out there sometimes.
They're really the post-event.
They're post-event devices.
Keeps the storm drains clear.
Right.
If it's a rain event, solely a rain event, at a medium tide, it can pump it out.
Right.
If we got a full high tide rain event, you're pumping against the tide and it just doesn't.
Right.
The minute your bulkhead breaches, so this is only as good as
the bulkhead,
your weakest link, right? So
yeah,
the minute a bulkhead breach, the pump does nothing. You can't beat the tide
right
when it comes over that bulkhead. So that's why that second step is important. Public education is important,
right? Yeah.
Because we've been around where you build a pump station And then everybody thinks,
right,
never flood again.
Right.
Nobody moves their car. Nobody pays attention.
Right.
And then you get a bulkhead breach and you're flooding.
Right.
So one of the areas that these pump stations have helped, if you go to the, and Ed, you were integral in it, is the North End of Brigantine, the golf course area. Mm-hmm. Used to flood all the time because I lived back there. They, after, I'm going to say the 92 storm, you started looking at it and they put in massive pumps, like the one over on Venter Gardens Plaza.
Right.
That size and even bigger. And it helps, but it only helps after the
fact. Storm. Yeah, it's not a solution. It's a part of the prevent. It's part of the after event.
So, got Mark, it. I think that the data you guys put together in the report is helpful to us in decision making. Our next step is to authorize his, and this will come up on a, it's not on tonight. It's in a future. We'll have a resolution in the next month or so to move forward with the design for the grant, right?
That would be my recommendation.
Yeah. So what Mark's going to do is we're going to have a resolution that we're going to put together to hire him,
right?
Take it to the next step to design something that we can then apply for a grant for. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Chief. He was probably trying to sneak out. I shouldn't have said that he was leaving. But that's the next step. So, and Ed was right. We got FEMA money to do this study.
Right.
So when you use their money, this is how they work. We use their money to do a FEMA study for the bulkhead on Winchester Avenue.
Right.
And then we got a grant from them to do the bulkhead on Winchester Avenue. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping the same thing comes true for this, right, that with this brick grant, which is FEMA and all kind of federal money to,
right,
do this kind of work.
Yeah, because when you talk to professionals that do this type of work and they say it's expensive,
yeah,
then we're talking about dollars for each pump station are high.
Yeah. What's the engineering solution? You can make water run uphill. It just costs money.
Right.
So that's what we're looking at. So anything else, Mark?
No, we just appreciate the opportunity to work on this for you guys.
No, this can change our community. If this is done, even half of it is done, I think that can change the lives of people that live in the Heights and that travel through the Heights. We won't have to have as many barricades out there, hopefully, in sometime in the future. But go ahead.
Oh, no, I agree. It's the ability to measure it is the first step in managing it, right? So that's a big step forward. So we have that data for all the departments that need it.
And as you can see, if you move forward, as your lowest bulkhead gets a foot higher, your investment gets a foot better. And it
right.
Going
okay. Right.
Yep. So we know where they are.
Good. Mm-hmm. Good. Marie, you have anything?
No, I don't.
Okay. She lives on one of those bulkheads. Not the bad ones, not the low ones. All right. Well, thank you guys. I appreciate it. We'll take a couple minute break for you to clean up your stuff, and we'll take a motion for 5 minute recess.
Sure.
Motion?
Motion for 5 minute recess.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Give us 5 minutes, guys. We'll be right back. We're going to push that to our April meeting because the date was incorrect on the document. So we're going to wait till April to do that. We do not have department head reports. Just so everybody knows, this is our workshop. So we go through the agenda. We talk about each item, do these presentations. And then when we get into the regular agenda, we'll actually vote on these after some public comment. The following items are scheduled for action in our regular meeting portion of this commission meeting. We will adopt our February 23rd, 2023 regular meeting minutes. We will have an ordinance introduction on our short-term rentals, ordinance 2023-003. We've had several public hearings on that in preparation of these changes. The highlights of those changes are we will be going to a two-night minimum. Each applicant or each operator will have to come in and get a mercantile license, and that mercantile license or the documentation or the information on that license will have to be shown on the property. That's a question I have, Mark. It just says shown somewhere near the entrance.
Correct.
Outside?
It can be inside, it's my understanding.
Because my only thought was part of the reason for that was to have contact information on the outside for either a neighbor or police coming to the property of an owner who to contact there. Chief, does that help you if that's on the outside of the building? I mean, you would already know that, I think, because you can get the mercantile from.
Yeah, we would have a list. I may have a privacy issue.
That's putting it on the outside. Okay.
That's what I was worried about.
Okay. That's why I asked the question. So it just has to be somewhere in and around near the entrance. Yeah. Okay. So if someone does an inspection or PD's there, they can say, all right, here's this placard. You're allowed to have 10 people here. You got 50.
Yes.
Okay. So that'll be on, not on the outside, but somewhere near the entrance. Inspections will be required within 30 days of the mercantile license. If an operator is not local, they will have to designate a local person to be the responsible party to be available 24/7 if there's an issue with the property. Right. So that is something else we're adding. We also reemphasize that parking noise and trash must comply with our current ordinance standards on all these properties. So that'll be introduced tonight, and our next meeting we'll have a public hearing on it. Any questions on that?
No, I agree. I think the 2-night minimum is something that helps the police department. The incidents that we've had are with single nights.
And this is a start. If this works, then we're good. If it doesn't, you know, we've had a conversation with PD and even code,
right,
about extending that a little bit further. Maybe in the summer months, we do one limitation, and in the off months, we do something else. So
I agree. I'm in favor of a 5-day minimum during Memorial Day, Labor Day in the future, but
okay,
we'll take it steps.
Steps. Agreed. We'll go through resolutions 2023-103 through 114. We're still on with B, which we're keeping 104 on. Okay. The first is resolution 2023-103, and that's to do a temporary budget. Amy, that's just to move things around to get us through till the end of our budget year.
Yep. Adding additional.
Okay. 2023-104 is authorizing mayor to execute a shared services agreement with the city of Brigantine and licensed water and sewer operator Ernie Gratz. We've had this already. This is just updating that same
renewal
of that. Ernie, you're still good with working with Brigantine?
Yes.
Thank you. It's a good shared service. Ernie is a value to us and them as well. So it helps their system, and they pay us dollars to use him and saves us some money and saves them some money. So we certainly appreciate that and your efforts, Ernie. It shows how well respected our guy is if another community is coming to ask to use him.
Right.
So we appreciate that. Resolution 105 is State of New Jersey authorizing no parking during the farmer's market. Any questions with that? Seeing none, we'll move to 106 is to refund an over a tax overpayment. We get a couple of those each month. Second, 107 is the same thing. 108 is authorizing enforcing a no parking within the city of Ventnor from April 1st to June 30th. These are for special events or construction or things that pop up that we have to close roads and no parking.
Standard every season.
Yep, we do it every year. Resolution 109, authorizing disposal of surplus property. It'll go on the government auction site. We've got quite a few things on there, from computer equipment to cars.
Doors.
What's that?
Doors.
Our old door. Not all of them, right? We're keeping some of those. That door.
I may have to bid on one. I like those. Ones.
Me too. Do something with them. Anyway,
cars.
Well, I'm not so sure the cars are worth too much, but resolution 110,
Polaris,
authorizing the closing out of escrow accounts. Standard practice. Resolution 111 is amending the employee personnel policies and procedures manual, educational assistance and training policy, and conference and seminar policy. It allows our staff to get trained up, whether it's CDL licenses or training for their...
Yeah, we wanted to make it a little clearer that, staff may request to go get a certification or take a class, and they would pay for it, and provided there's budget funding and they complete it, we may approve to reimburse them.
Gotcha.
But then we have, and that was clear, but what wasn't clear is when the city says, I want you to go and get certified in this, then we're paying that.
Right.
They're not paying it up front.
Understood.
So we wanted to add that language in there to make the differential there.
Okay. Thank you. Resolution 112 is for allowing and expanding outdoor seating for restaurants during COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic shutdown of retail and commercial businesses in the state of New Jersey. This just extends that ability to operate outside. It also provides a more them to provide us with a more detailed plan of the area, the size, insurance, things of that nature. So this helps our code and our PD department.
And Chief Buster kind of took this under his belt last year in getting restaurants approved. And it was a joint effort with you and code, but with his involvement, it went so much smoother.
Agreed.
And, you know, we got the applications in and the paperwork in and the insurance stuff in prior to the season starting instead of in the middle or at the end of the season. So thank you, because you really made it, you streamlined it, you made it so easy, and you took a lot off of me because I was dealing with it for a while. So thank you.
Now it's all off you. We got Tom.
Now it's on Tom.
Yeah, but it is interesting that once the parameters were set and people were clear and the communication was there, it kind of fell into place. And we want the outside dining.
Yeah, we do.
We want it. We just want it to be safe and compliant. Yeah. That's all. Yeah.
Good. And I think last summer was
better. Yeah.
A lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Chief, thank you. I appreciate it. 113 is designating the official newspapers, the Press, Courier Post, and Mainland Journal. I know the Press is going to stop a paper copy, or at least a home delivery copy, on April 1st. I guess they're going to do some kind of mailing starting after that. I don't know. I'm old school. I like my newspaper. But
they're not going to have a printed paper 7 days a week.
Correct. Right?
Which is a problem sometimes for us when we have post-legal.
So when this came about, also with what I do at CRDA, we have an issue with the same thing. So I reached out to Senator Palestina. What has to happen from, not necessarily for leases issues and municipal issues, but for land use. It has to be 10 days prior to a hearing. We have a lot of that too. But from a land use standpoint, it's problematic because the municipal land use law requires it to be in a written newspaper that has general circulation in the area. So there's an amendment to the state statute that's going to have to occur. So the state's aware of it, and they're going to try and work something into it.
Yeah, for us, it hamstrings us maybe by a week here and there if we're getting an ordinance passed, because we'll have to, because the timing doesn't work with our meetings, and it may actually drag things out.
I think the state's going to have to come up with a way to accept digital notification. So that's where they're leaning towards, at least from what Senator Palestine indicated to me. So hopefully
I don't think it's a trend. I think we're headed digital.
I know. I'm going to have to get one of these to read the newspaper on every morning. And how's Boomer going to come out and pick up the laptop at our step and bring it in the house? Poor Boomer. Last resolution is 114, and that is approving rates and charges and fees for the year of 2023 for Recreation Department of the City of Ventnor. And one question I have is, I know we had it on before and we pulled it. This is just regular fees, no major changes to these?
No, there was the sports camps and so forth. There were we have a number of camps. We corrected some math errors in some of them, but the fees have not changed in a substantive way.
All right. Because I know we had some concerns with the shared revenue thing. We push that off till next year.
Yes.
That's what I really wanted
to say. Yeah, that 60-40 or 80-20 is not. We're going to notify anybody that would impact for next year.
Not a good color one. Just for clarity, maybe when we do something like that in an ordinance, can we show this, like the red line in our drafts?
I could, but when I have to shrink it down to make it fit on your packet, it has to be in black.
I'll do print. I'm fine.
Oh, I can just, you mean even on
the desk?
You got it.
Thank you. It just makes
you got
clarity.
It.
So that's all. All right. That's all the resolutions. We'll have our bills and payroll. We have a discussion item, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Had it here.
Probably on here.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I took it.
The mobile food vendor fees.
Yeah.
That's you. So we have a discussion item on mobile food vendor fees.
Right. So I wanted to bring this up so that we're kind of walking down this path together and understanding what my thinking is. The fire inspection brought this to me in our weekly meeting. And the background is that We're currently some of the lowest fees in Atlantic and Cape May County. And the result is that we are somewhere in the deficit of $4,000 a year for our overtime, the impact on our overtime for the need, which is to have open flame inspections at all our special events. So I think this is in part is a is catching up to the fact that our special events has grown into a major part of the city. And that's a positive thing, but I think we have to also keep the reality of our fees in line with that growth. So we're trying to create something that is in line with actually the state standards. The state doesn't really have we're actually bringing this up to what the state standard is, which is $54 per event. And right now we charge for instance the farmers market, we charge it a one-time fee for the entire season for anybody that goes there on a repeated basis. We net about $2,000 a year, and in our cost, with when you add up all of the events that we do, we're north of $6,000 a year because those events fall on times when our inspectors are not on their normal hours. They're usually weekends, right? And then you add the concerts to that. We have somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 events in 100 days. So, or it's probably a little bit more than that. So what the fire department has, and we've looked at it from a couple of different angles. We've gotten information from Brigantine and from other municipalities and how they handle it. And what we'd like, what they're proposing, and I support, is a $54 per event fee for each inspection.
Including the farmer's market?
Including the farmer's market. $54. Each time. Or if you're going to be at numerous events, a $427 a year fee. Now, these are not numbers that our department came up with.
Okay.
These are the state numbers that we are mandated to charge. And if they go to a state, if the state inspectors, if they do anything that is a state fair, they do get charged those fees.
So the one-time fee will be how much?
The one-time fee for the entire year would be $427.
Okay.
And that's statute. And the state minimum, you can charge whatever you like, but the state minimum is $54 per event. Now,
wait a minute. You can charge whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's not 54.
Or the minimum is 54. So we also tried to look at it. You keep the farmer's market as a single item, and because they are repetitive and it's usually the same vendors.
I would like to see us do that.
Yeah, me too.
Then that kind of negates the idea of the $427 fee because there aren't enough other events.
Well, I think we get a lot of the same vendors that come to the concerts, and they would be able to pay that one-time fee because you have.
Right. For a few vendors that do the concerts and the farmer's market, the one-time fee is financially makes more sense. But for a person that is, for instance, it wouldn't necessarily. There aren't enough other events. But they're always rotating different vendors.
Do they? Okay.
So
what does Brigantine do in regards to the farmers?
Brigantine does the farmer's market as a single event, $54 for the entire
time?
No. One time for all the vendors. And if there's another event, they charge $54. I'm willing to say let's do that for one season and see if the and check it against the math. But
so wait a minute, Brigantine's charging them $54 for the whole season
of farmers
market, not $54 for every week.
If there's any if there's any other event,
very successful farmers market, and so do we. And to a certain extent, I feel like it's not broke, don't fix it. And I understand what you're saying about we're not covering our fees, but
we the have, farmers market is also during the week.
Yeah,
it's a Friday morning.
Right.
Well, that's not, it shouldn't be. I agree. The Saturday nights, these guys are out on extra time. I get that. Wednesday nights,
right,
out on extra time. I get all that. And even the
The block party.
Block party,
the Saturday events. I get all those that we have to cover.
The larger events that are supported by like this, the seafood festival, though they're kind of built into their fees.
Yes.
So we don't have to worry about that. But there is, you know, we're trying to offset the cost of the city.
What's
not the fee and not now? Leave it just to the taxpayers.
What's the fee now?
The fee now is as it exists is $54 period. Food is one fee for $54 for the entire season.
The same like for concerts, it's $54 for the same food truck comp every week. It's $54 for the entire series.
Well, if you if they come to a different event, it's a new unit. They pay the $54, but if they've already paid, it's a yearly fee, despite whether it's despite whether it's a single or multiple event, each open flame vendor pays $54 for the season.
So the
difference here,
$54 for all the concerts,
correct?
Period, not $54 per concert,
correct?
So it might be helpful for.
But we have to put a man out there for each.
Yeah.
Right.
Event. So that's why, the two fee structure, is the only one that really offsets the cost to the city.
Yeah, I thought our only option was 54 or 27, but you're saying we can come up with something in the middle.
You could.
Okay.
You could. So that's an option. We don't want to discourage vendors from coming. And I actually sent some of this information to Andy and Penny, who run the farmers market. So I believe they're on. So we might have them comment as well to the group. But that's basically where we landed is the two fees. 54 per event or
season would be 427.
427 for the season.
So if they attend eight events, that's the same.
Right.
Eight events is the break-even point for that 427 versus 54 hours each.
Correct. And so we can have
more than eight events, then that would be.
Yeah, and Penny and Andy Ross
run break-even points probably the first event that they do. They make the money back.
I meant from the fee standpoint, because that's what they're gonna look at.
Right.
They're going to look at how much it's costing them, not how much money they're bringing in.
Right.
And you get a rain out, everybody goes home. Mm-hmm. That's happened. We've had that a couple times.
So in addition to the farmer's market every Friday, we have two concerts a week, you know, a total of 45 events. All of those don't have the same vendors with Open Flame. We're just talking about the ones with Open Flame that require our inspectors to be there. But
so the Open Flame, it would only apply to the Open Flame.
Only applies to
the farmers market also.
Correct.
There's a few over there.
Only the ones that are.
I think.
In between.
Yeah.
We can talk about it. That's why we're discussing it.
Yeah. Yep.
And if we could see the comparable.
Before. Okay. Yeah.
That would be helpful.
We could sort of project what that would be in both scenarios.
Yeah. I mean the other town.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear what Andy and Penny have to say about it?
Are they on right now? Yeah, Andy's on. Jim, can you let Andy Starr in?
Go ahead, Andy.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, Andy.
How is it up there?
Colder than where you are, I bet.
There you go. We're home in a week, so we'll be joining everybody. Thanks for having the lively discussion on this. The farmers market has five or six vendors that have Open Flame that are, you know, basically at the farmers market every week, so all 15 weeks this year. And some of them are at most or all of the concerts. Not all of them, but some of them are. There's also a few vendors that come to the concerts for some of the weeks, but not all, you know, three, four, five, six. It's a mixed bag, and it's still a work in progress this year through special events department. They may be the most impacted if they only do a few. I guess if you took a vendor doing 15 weeks at the farmer's market and another, whatever it is, 15, you know, 20 or 30 at the concerts, and then you divide it into the 427 or whatever that number is, it's not that much when you look at it that way. If that makes sense.
Right? Yep. That's how I kind of look at it. I just don't know how many times each of these guys come. So that's why we want to kind of see maybe a breakdown of that.
Yeah. And, you know, they will not be happy, obviously, because it's a big hit. It's mostly very small businesses. You know, I guess it's from the city's perspective, balancing it out versus the cost. And, you know, I guess the inspector is at the farmer's market about 7:30 to 8 or so every Friday morning, and then has to come to the concerts Wednesday night and Saturday night. And that doesn't count block party and other events.
Right. Yeah. You know, like I said, we're trying to measure it. If we make a decision to, and with, at least we know what our costs are and we know what we're.
Yeah. I do not know how many open flame vendors there are in Brigantine. I don't know if they have as many as we do. I just don't have that information. And Margate, I'm told at least the farmer's market, I'm told Margate has no open flame vendors currently at the Margate farmer's market.
Okay. All right. I think we're moving. We're going to discuss it more. We're not taking any action tonight. We'll look into it a little bit more. Tim's going to provide us with some more comparison stuff and where our costs are. We'll keep the discussion going.
Yeah. We don't want to, and we don't want to do anything to impede the progress or production of the farmer's market. You know, we want to be a partner there. It's one of my favorite events.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Appreciate the support.
Thank you, Andy.
Thanks for your input, Andy.
Yep.
All right, that's it for discussion items. The next item is our public portion. This is for anything we've discussed this evening so far in our workshop. So if you have any comments, I'll need a motion to open up to the public. But when you do come up, please state your name, your address, and then give us your comment. So I'll need a motion to open to the public.
Motion to open to the public.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So we're now open to the public. Anybody here or on Zoom, please come up to the microphone and provide your comments. We have someone right here in It does. Later on this evening, at the end of our regular meeting, we'll have anything you can want to talk about. So, Jim, anybody on Zoom wants to speak about the agenda items?
Anybody on Zoom wishes to speak or comment on any of the items that were discussed on the agenda, please raise your hand in Zoom and you'll be recognized. No one.
I've got to say I'm a little surprised because of the short-term rental was such a hot topic. And
the public hearing is next meeting.
Okay.
So this is just the introduction. We'll do the public session on that. It'll be next week.
Okay.
Next meeting. Motion to close public portion.
Motion to close public portion.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Anybody else?
Aye.
There we go. Thank you. I'll need a motion to close the public portion and move into our regular portion of the meeting.
Motion to close public portion and move into the regular meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody else?
All right. The first item is approval of the minutes of our February 23rd, 2023 regular meeting. I'll need a motion.
Motion to approve minutes as described.
And a second. And a second.
I would like to second, but I would like to recuse myself from anything that was paid to the Atlanta County Utilities Authority.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Does that work?
Yes.
All right. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Kriebel?
Yes.
Commissioner Mento?
Yes.
Mayor Langria?
Yes. Okay. Next item is ordinance introduction. Need a motion to introduce ordinance 2023-003, an ordinance for the City of Ventnor, County of Atlantic, State of New Jersey, amending Chapter 149 of the Code of the City of Ventnor, requiring certain rental units to obtain mercantile licenses and supplementing ordinance for regulations of short-term rentals. Your motion, please.
Motion to introduce ordinance 2023-003.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Kriebel?
Yes.
Commissioner Mento?
Yes.
Mayor Langria?
Yes. We have no public hearings this evening on ordinances. We have no ordinance adoptions. I'll need a motion to adopt by consent resolutions 2023-103 through 114.
Motion to adopt by consent resolutions as described.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Kriebel?
Yes.
Commissioner Mento?
Yes.
Mayor Landgraf?
Yes. Okay. We'll need approval of bills and payroll from our acting CFO, Amy Stovall.
The payrolls for this period, $1,194,137.63. The payables for this period, $2,489,961.49.
Okay, thank you. Need a motion to approve bills and payroll?
Motion to approve bills and payroll as described.
Once again, I will second, but I am recusing myself from PO 23-00560, 23-00499, and 23-00337-02, all related to the Atlantic County Utilities Authority. Because I sit on the board, I recuse Understood. Myself from those payments.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Smart. Need a motion. That was a motion. A second. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Kriebel?
Yes.
Commissioner Mento?
Yes.
Mayor Landgraf?
Yes. Announcements and safety report. Our safety report is on our agenda each month, each meeting. Announcement, kind of sad day here in the city of Ventnor. We lost Al Russo today. 91 years old, 91 years young.
Mm.
Just a great guy in our community. Our thoughts go out to AJ and Rhonda and the family. So I have not heard anything on services yet, but Al was a longtime resident, longtime volunteer, you know, just a great member of our community. And we lost him today. So sad day. With that, I got to follow that up with a budget comment, really. it is budget season. So we've all had our meetings with budgets. We'll be coming out with that in April. I think April 13th, we're going to introduce. Budgets are going to be difficult this year with the health benefits that are going up from the state. They're going up 25%. That's going to be a significant impact to our budgets. We've gone back to each of our department heads and looked at each thing six ways to Sunday, trying to drive that number down as much as we can. But it's going to be a difficult time. We have our BOES meeting coming up next week with the Board of School Estimates. So it's going to be a difficult time. Couple other quick things. If you've been out to the pier lately, the old gate has been removed.
Nice.
And the kiosk will be under construction. It was prefabricated, so it'll be craned onto the site.
Awesome.
What they're doing now is bolstering the undercarriage of the pier.
Ah.
So they'll be sitting this thing right on top of there. So
take a video of that.
Yeah, I got to add it. And our assistant city engineer is a photographer, so
yeah,
documenting the whole thing. So
fantastic.
When they crane it in, we'll be there.
Yeah.
We want to see that.
Yeah.
So I want to see how to get the crane on the beach, actually. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. Well, prefabrication is a great way of doing it. It really kind of probably in the end of the day, it that was the most difficult part of building the pier house was, you know, navigating onto the pier.
Sure.
Materials.
Leveling it.
Leveling it. Yeah. Yeah, and just the access for tools and manpower.
Yeah. So
that's great.
Last thing I have is we were reached out to by John Gowdy to do a, you know, all the beach communities have been involved in, you know, the offshore wind and trying to get a pause to happen. We passed a resolution. Brigantine has been the lead in that. So John Gowdy is a sand sculptor, and he reached out to Ed Stinson in our public works department and asked if we could assist him with gathering some sand from our beach so he could do a life-size whale sculpture. On our beach. So they're going to do that. We piled the sand up. You'll see it up by headquarters up on Suffolk Avenue area.
Right.
So April 1st is when he hopes to have that finished.
April Fool's Day.
Yes. Yes. Apropos for some of the things going on there. There will be, I forget his first name. The artist is Higgins. He wrote a song about Save the Whales. So he's going to be there to perform that about 1 o'clock that day. So I encourage people to come out and support that. The effort to, you know, put these offshore wind turbines on hold until we find out what's happened.
I agree.
We had a bunch more dolphin.
Six or eight
dolphin die yesterday on Sea Isles Beach. So something that's critical to our community, our region. We want to make sure we're doing the right thing. So that's all I have. That was a lot for me.
Hmm. Yeah, I have a couple things brief. One, update from the fire chief. He briefed me today on the Atlantic County Tactical Force dispatch. So it's something that is somewhat new. It's been in, I think, on chalkboard discussions for a while, but what it amounts to is that we are participating in a mutual aid agreement with other other operations in the county, that if there is a large event, like there was an 11 alarm fire in at a church in North Jersey recently, an event like that, it'll trigger different areas, and they've worked to make it a logical distribution of equipment and men and location, so that when it does get triggered, we'll participate in backfilling the local areas that don't have coverage because they're fighting the fire or whatever that task is.
They do that very well now. This is a new.
So this is, yeah, we do it already. It is, and it's more for large events. So we're talking about one, most likely Chief Cahill would be sent as part of command, and we would send one engine and the crew that operates it. Gotcha. So four men, and you might get an event like this. It's unknown when, but it could be two or three or half a dozen times a year. But if you don't participate in these types of things, you also don't receive those types of things.
No, I think absolutely.
That's important to know.
Absolutely. I'll say this, and I think I've said it before, and Commissioner Kriebel says it a lot. Police and fire have the best coordination, shared services, backfilling, all of that. Then, governing bodies could learn a lot from fire and police departments.
Yep.
Chief Fussner, you guys work together. So.
Yep. Chief Fussner and Chief Cahill have the experience and the know-how to get to have all the processes not only run smoothly, but they vet them and they bench test them. They blackboard them before these types of things go forward. So I'm lucky to have them. I just want to say the camps are off at full speed. The surf camp is already full.
Wow.
When it went live, it was full in less than a week.
I'm never gonna learn how to surf.
And I got a call when I was traveling because there were so many kids that we like to keep our student to coach ratio at around two. And so it was made sense. We added two instructors just to fill the amount of demand that we had. A lot of local kids wanted to do it. So that not only did it get full, but it increased the volume. And all the other camps are up and running. And if anybody's interested in it, the rec desk is really is a new program to us that Tina, the new rec director, is championing, and it's working for all sorts of things, including all these recreation events, as well as you could sign up like sports camps and chess camp and the community yard sale. You can even, you don't have to come in
really
and pay your dollar. You can do it right online.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's definitely that department's getting making improvements.
Okay.
What you got?
Any new commissioner?
Yeah, I would just echo your comments on this being a really tough budget year with unprecedented increases in health benefits and even pension. We did have our consultant look at moving out of the state New Jersey health benefits plan, and we didn't get much interest because we had some significant health exposures the past year or two. Right. So maybe we can look at that again in another year or two.
The county's looking at it for next year.
The county's looking at it. But this isn't something unique to Ventnor. Every town is getting hit with these increases from the state. And you'll see as cities introduce their budgets that you're going to be, seeing some things we probably haven't seen in a while.
Yes.
So we're working hard. We're scrubbing the numbers. There's not a lot of anything in there that you can take out. Most of our budget is... our labor, our public safety, and our people. So April, we'll have more info.
Right, yeah.
As we move forward.
Okay.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
Tom, anything?
Is this on? Yeah.
It is.
Today marks 1 month since you appointed me to this position. And
not leaving.
And no, I'm not leaving. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's a pleasure to work with people like yourselves that are so engaged in the community and active, take a really active role in your jobs. I've worked with some elected officials that you only saw them when it was time for an elected body meeting. With you guys, that's not the case. You're involved every day, and that's refreshing for me. But I also want to make sure that everybody knows that these budget problems aren't my fault.
CYA.
Just because you're here, you brought them with us. No, you're all right.
Just found last year.
Bullet
yeah, right. Thank you. Thank you for your comments. with that, with nothing else from the commissioners and our city administrator, we'll open up the public comment on anything you want to discuss. So need a motion to open to public?
Motion to open to public.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So, ma'am, please come forward.
Please. Yeah. Come up to the microphone. You have to go online and state your name and address. Sorry.
You can tilt that down if you'd like. It's a little tall.
My name is Leah Gabriel, and I'm a lifelong resident of Ventnor, and I love the boardwalk, and that's why I'm here. I don't know if there's any ordinance about all the decorations they're putting up on the benches. I kind of feel like the bench is there for the public to sit, and I've taken some pictures because I don't know who owns the bench. I don't care. It's not about that. When I pass, I ask for a bench, but no flowers put on it. Because there's like pictures I took of all this stuff on the benches. You can't even sit. And okay, Christmas, they left it up for like 2 months. Then comes Valentine's Day. Then comes Easter. Then comes this. Then comes that. Every holiday, these benches are going to be all these decorations on the benches where you can't sit. And that's not what the benches are for. And I just feel they're put on city property. They donate the bench. They have a plaque that should be enough to you put those things at the gravesite. This is not a gravesite. It is for the people to enjoy from far away and nearby. And I just don't know if there's an ordinance for that. That, and I'm not picking on anyone, believe me, because I'm Italian. I'd be the first to gaudy up something. But this isn't what that's for. And I just thought it needs to be, you know, stop now before here comes St. Patrick's Day. And there's going to be all this green and streamers wrapped around the benches. And it looks awful. I mean, it really does.
Well, so I don't know that we necessarily have an ordinance with regard to it. Some of the benches are more decorated than others. Most of them are not. There are a few that are
decorated. But that's what I'm saying. It's going to start. Well, if you let one get away, it's just going to multiply.
Well, it's not really getting away. It's their way of remembering a loved one.
But is that the place to remember them, well, really?
To them, it is. To them, it is. So it has not become a huge problem at this point. We will take a look at it. If it seems like it's getting out of hand, okay, we will contact the people who donated that bench.
So there's no ordinance about decorating and you can keep it up all and decorate for every season and not. Every. Hmm?
There is not.
There is not.
No.
Okay. I'm surprised.
It's a valid concern, but I don't know that it's something that rises to a level that we need to pass an ordinance on it. I only see probably 2 to 3 of them that I see on the boardwalk that are decorated. I don't see flowers there very often.
Oh.
And they're typically, you're still able to sit on them, at least the ones that I see. I will be more observant as I ride my bike by. I'll have to look at the benches and not where I'm going. But I will take a look at it and see. I'm sure Commissioner Kriebel will do the same. But again, it's individual people, you know, remembering their loved ones the way they
and all due respect, I that is perfectly fine. It's just that when you put 3-4 things up on these benches and they're sticking out like this and you can't sit on them, granted, there's a million other benches you could sit on. That's not the point. But then if everyone does it, what's that going to look like?
Right. Well, I don't think it's gotten to that level just yet. No,
that's why I brought it up, so then it wouldn't get to that level. But if that's not a concern for you, that's fine.
Well, it hasn't risen to a level that it's created a problem.
Well, that's why I'm here to stop that.
Well,
But if that's okay, it was my opinion as a
and
you know,
it's not falling on deaf ears. I get it. I understand what your point is, but I'm not sure I'm ready to do. This is me personally saying I'm not ready to do something just yet. I will take a look at it, and we know whose bench is.
Of course,
each of Mark's. They know the names. We know who paid for that bench. We can call them and say, hey, look, can you dial it back a little bit?
Right.
So these benches can be used. So
right.
We certainly will take that effort. I think we can do that.
Sure. Sure. I think you could maybe even gently, like I think a lot of people, you could even say when you're in the new bench applications, you could say, you know, 48 hours, something like that.
I wouldn't even have a problem walking on the boardwalk and seeing that, say, for 2 days at Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever, you put up something,
right.
But then take it down.
Right.
I just feel like when they're up there for 2 months, it's really
like when you go into the store and they're already selling, they're already decorating for back to school.
Exactly.
And it's school
like visiting. 2 days, you know, that week even, but to see it. And then there's so many holidays now.
Yeah.
There's going to be decorated all the time.
It's hard to be on a diet when
right. So that's all. I just thought, as far as Vetner looking not so tacky like that up on there, it really. And there was even on one of the poles, they had these bouquets of flowers 1 week. I even took a picture. I don't know what that was about. I mean, all tied up. So there has been more and more. If right. you're up there every day, you'll see it.
It's a point well taken. That one is that you if you ignore it, then it seems as though you're encouraging it. So right. you got to find a happy medium.
Happy medium, even new bent, whatever you want to do. But I just thought it just
doing it can be up for a day or two. But that's it.
That's,
you can't block people from sitting. I agree.
That's all. I mean, if I show you the pictures I took, and you know. Believe me, I don't have a problem with any. I just think that's someplace that you put the bench for a reason and to enjoy the beautiful scenery and all that and have people sit there. They don't lean against decorations. But that's just my opinion. I had to do this. Don't ask me why.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
That's good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Listening.
Thanks.
Okay.
Have a great night. Anyone else in the chambers? You're going up.
Hey, let's go, Keith.
Keith Craig, 701 North Surrey Avenue. How are you, Ken?
Good.
Mayor, Commissioner.
Good evening.
Just a quick thing. I guess the best way to start is it's been another rough off season on Wellington Avenue. I've lived there for over 10 years now. We've had Superstorm Sandy. We've had the sewer break. From Superstorm Sandy, we had a couple of sinkholes that were then paved over, which became speed bumps. And now in the last, 2.5 months, the utilities have been out on Wellington Avenue doing whatever they're doing. Great, all fine and well. But right at Surrey and Wellington is one of the trenches that they dug up. And it's another speed bump. And I'm getting cracks in my trim. I'm getting cracks in my tiling. I'm getting four planks that are shifting because every time, since it's the truck route, every time one of those major trucks comes by, and if it's loaded with sand coming into Down Beach for something, whatever, my whole house shakes. And it's, you don't really notice it. I mean, you have cars going by, but truck comes by, hits that trench, which has only been there maybe 2 months now. And everything shakes and everything cracks. You hear the cracks. The studs in the walls are starting like to pop out and stuff.
So Surrey is?
Surrey is.
Just past the light at.
Yes.
At
Victoria.
Little Rock, right. Little Rock, Victoria.
Little Rock and Victoria.
The first unit.
Is it?
On the first unit.
Right. So it's the county project.
That's right.
That's doing it. But it's also, so you had South Jersey Gas in. Doing a new main coming down underneath the sidewalk there. So on your side, I think, right?
Like I said, it's been a turbulent off season again along Wellington.
They ran into everything. They hit.
Oh man,
that's right. They hit two water laterals.
Three
water laterals and one main. Well,
so what I'll do with the county's coming back in now to
repave. Ernie's got three.
Okay, that was one of my questions. Was is it going to be repaved soon?
Yes. So I mean, they, if you're on our website and even the counties, they added in there that they started this week prepping Ventnor Avenue for paving the intersections that they finished. They're already done the utility work, the traffic signal work at Little Rock and Wellington. That should be on that same list. The paving company shut down for the month of February. They have to redo their, it's too cold, so they redo their plants. So now they're starting back up to redo that work. So
that's good news.
Hopefully they'll be out of here by the end of April, we're hoping.
Can we raise it the 6 inches or 1 foot for the
While we're at it?
So we actually asked the county to do that when they repaved Wellington.
Paying attention.
6 years ago.
Right, right.
And they refused to do that.
Wow.
Half a foot gives us 2, 3, 4 less closures of that road.
Right. Hmm. Yeah.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they, drainage. No, stop.
Second thing, and again, it has to do with right there at Wellington, is this has probably been about a year, maybe a year and a half now or so, but the light at Victoria and the light at the Acme, they changed the timing.
Right.
And I have pictures as well. Since then, the grime that has accumulated on the side of my house from emissions is unbelievably noticeable.
Cars sitting there. So they're not timed yet. They are right now. They're on. Oh, I shouldn't say that. They are not set as they will be set.
Okay.
Right now they are just on a rotating thing where just every so many minutes it changes.
Right.
What will eventually happen is there's going to be a GPS system, GIS system, excuse me, tied to all those lights all the way through from Albany Avenue to the bridge in Longport. That all those lights will be controlled by traffic sensing GPS and GIS systems. There's little cameras on each one of those that will control that better.
Yeah, because I mean, just like I said, in the last year and a half, whenever they went to the, before Victoria was about 10 seconds long,
right?
And Acme might have been 10 seconds long. Acme is now at least 45 when you're heading eastbound.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. It might be only 30 heading westbound. It's crazy. It's like, you don't need that much time to get out of Acme.
They will be changing that when it's all done. That was the whole purpose of the whole project, was to put in this controlling system. So I've been in the meetings with the county. As soon as they finish all the paving, they'll have their consultant come out and then they'll set it through the system. We actually hope, this is a little ways in the future, Ed's not here tonight to talk about it, Atlantic Avenue. We've talked to them about, we would have to buy new controllers, but we want to tie that into the same system.
Right.
Where it has a camera and it monitors the intersection. If there's no cars coming, it stays green.
Yeah, because that's, I mean, when, especially in the summertime.
Right.
In last summer was the first summer that the timing was extended at those two lights.
Backed up all the way to Dorset Avenue.
It was unreal. And, you know, I walk out of my house and it's kind of like, wow. And then I look at my house. I don't need to show you the pictures. I'm taking up too much time here now. No, but it's just crazy. It's like, you know.
Soon. We hope soon that all the bumps will be gone. Especially, we have the same issue on Ventnor Avenue where they did, you know, the work here and the buses.
Okay.
The bus hits it.
Good heart. News.
So yeah.
That's
hopefully only a few more weeks.
Thanks, Lance. Yeah, appreciate it.
Thanks for coming out.
Good to see you.
Thanks.
Anybody else in chambers? Ernie, no, you're good. I'll look for Jim to put it out to the Zoom attendees.
Is anybody on Zoom who wishes to speak on any items? Please make yourself known by raising your hand. You'll be recognized. No takers.
Okay. I'll ask for motion to close the public.
Motion to close public session.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. We do have an executive session tonight to discuss contracts. Yes. That's right. So I will read that. So for this, once we read this, we will have to ask the public to leave, which is mostly already gone. And Jim will put it on mute for the on Zoom members. New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act permits the discussion of certain matters within an executive session as an exception to certain provisions of said law. Ventnor City Board of Commissioners wishes to disclose certain matters, discuss certain matters which qualify as exceptions in executive session. No acting binding upon the Board of Commissioners will be taken within executive session. And discussions conducted in closed session will be disclosed to the public when legally permitted and when the public interest will no longer be served by keeping the matters confidential. Matters to be discussed are contract negotiations. You're supposed to be reading.
We talked about executive session, the essentially the contracts for the municipal courts, and no decision was made, obviously.
Okay, thank you. We're back in regular session, and we have no more further business, so I'll ask for a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all. Green's going to run out of here.